Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and we are inviting to the microphones the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nianus, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture, Gardening Haiku Poet, and Erwin Goldman, Professor of Horticulture, Associate Dean in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Really happy to have them with us today, and you can join in with your questions. I know peppers will be coming up a lot on the show. I'm pretty sure other vegetables like tomatoes and other great vegetables will be with us as well in this particular program. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Jim and Erwin, welcome back.
Larry, thank you so much. You know, if it weren't for this program, Jim and I wouldn't be on that work release option. So thank you for having us.
Well, I tell you what, here we are eating sugar snap peas just before the program, and they're delicious. Erwin, you were responsible for those peas.
You know, thank goodness, that was my wife's doing. But this is a perfect vegetable, isn't it? From a nutritional standpoint, from a flavor, it is just nothing like a sugar snap pea pod, I think.
The artichoke would be the only thing that I would think might even compare to that.
On the fiber side?
Have you ever gone to that restaurant just outside of Gilroy?
You know, I've not. That's Castroville, isn't it?
Is it? Maybe it is.
That's Castroville?
But you go into this town, which is this. It's about 150 residents. They've got, you know, the Catholic Church is the size of a cathedral, right? Mm-hmm. It's all Italian immigrants. And in that town, they have the artichoke restaurant, and everything on the menu, everything
is made with artichoke.
Is made with artichoke, including the coffee. You get such a fiber rush that you are regular for months afterwards. Really, take it from me; I've been there and done that. If any of our listeners have been into that fiber rush,
man, yeah.
I don't know if we want to hear the details of that. We should really elevate this to poetry before we go into that.
I tell you what, we have already, we're going to go to Danny and Fitchburg in a minute, but we've already had several calls with pepper problems.
Oop.
And there's, here are the kinds of questions. No blossoms, no nothing. What's happening with the pepper crop?
Cursed, really. I don't think there's any question about that. No
flowers at all.
You know, we should publish it. If it has no flowers, it's a non-flowering plant, which means that it should be completely reclassified botanically. And I would suggest that you eat it as an herb.
Well, I wonder if, you know, did we have, what was the weather like in spring?
This has been pepper year. This has definitely been the pepper year. Last year we had trouble. I don't know if you remember that.
But what you're saying is if you can't grow peppers this year, you might want to hang it up. Is that what you're suggesting?
It's been a great year for peppers.
Yeah, it's been we have peppers that are like, they're like 14 pounds, you know, each pepper.
The size of small pumpkins.
No, it's like you can carve them.
Yeah.
You know,
it's been a good year.
It's been a good year, so who knows what happened in a particular microenvironment.
There could have been, you know, obviously last year our problem was that we had that long period of heat and we had blossom failure, I believe what was happening. We had blasting of the pollen, so there wasn't, we weren't getting fertilization.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, my travels about the state have indicated to me that most people have an abundance of peppers. It's been a pretty good year for the pepper this year.
So maybe some of those dry, hot parts of the state, in certain areas there may have been some problems.
That's right.
And there was, let's face it, more heat and drought outside of this area than the
outside of southern Wisconsin.
I
don't know where this particular caller is from, Larry, but.
And I'm not sure either. It was just somebody who called in and left a message about.
Yeah.
So we don't really know.
Not sure.
And the teardrop, I think, on the end of that message was appropriate. but tell them that if they are in desperate need of peppers, and I do know that at the grocery store they're pretty expensive still, that just give us a call. We've got a lot, and I'll be happy to share.
Danny in Fitchburg, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
It's Janie, but that's
okay. Oh, Janie? Oh, sorry, Janie.
Larry, I love your show, and the Vicars, I'm so glad to let you on the show.
Well, great, but you're starting to break up. Do you have a question for us? Oh, we completely lost her.
I can anticipate what her question might have been.
It had to do with a chili pepper string, but I'll tell you what.
Oh, aristas.
And how to do it? How to actually string the peppers?
Mm-hmm. Sewing thread would be a guess.
Yeah.
There may be more to it than this. I'll tell you what. We'll take another call. Jim Packard will get the information
She'll
for
call
us.
Back.
And we'll
yeah.
Instead, we'll go to Todd in Greenfield. Todd, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for having me. How come sometimes some tomatoes are so oddly shaped? I mean, they're real deformed. Sometimes they're perfectly round, and other times they're just like these really wacky shapes.
That could well be a moisture issue, couldn't it, Erwin?
Because God, you know, creates. There's a creativity aspect in there, and you know, sometimes you know that Mother Nature just tweaks us.
Well, I think pollination is.
Or I'm sorry, you have a scientific
it could
answer.
Be. I could just as a throw that out. I mean, pollination, right, is one possibility. Although uneven moisture availability is another possibility. I don't know. What do you think, Jim?
It's odd that. You know, there are odd shapes out there, but I just accept that, really.
How would pollination have an effect? I mean, what would be the effect?
Well, the left side, right side sort of pollination effect.
I mean, the ovules, you know, I think if there isn't even pollination, you can sometimes, with all fruits, not just with tomato, you can have misshapen fruit if there isn't adequate pollination for all the ovules.
That's right.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Okay, gotcha.
So that happens with some fruits, and I'm perhaps that's possible here.
You know, it's become a sport for many, though, really, and a source of entertainment. I mean, odd-shaped tomatoes, I think, are on every windowsill in the state of Wisconsin at this point.
Sure.
Some of them are beyond amusing.
Yeah.
And we're not going to go there.
It could be a moisture, and it could be a moisture issue,
moisture availability. Let's face it,
pollination.
Some of the genetics too that underlie this really do cause. I mean, for example, you'll have shoulders on these tomatoes that are very concave.
Right.
You'll have ones that really have very high ridges. So I mean, I think there is also some genetics there too.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Todd. Thanks for calling. And Richard in Lake Tomahawk. Hi to you.
Oh, Larry. I did miss the name of the town where the artichoke restaurant was, and I thought you said Castroville.
I think it's Castroville, California.
Or is it Gilroy?
Oh, in California.
Well, Gilroy's the garlic capital.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
And I think Castroville is the epicenter of artichoke production in the United. In fact, it may be the.
It's like three Italian families
that control.
They control. It's like the Italian artichoke mafia. Right? You go in and like everybody is. Hey, what you doing? They're talking to you. Wait, you want an artichoke? You know, I mean, it's incredible, and it's just totally dominated by these three families, and they're the ones who do all the canning and of the artichoke in the United States.
You did some research on the artichoke, didn't you?
We did.
What was the name of the restaurant, by the way?
I'm not sure.
Wow,
the artichoke restaurant.
It was hard to miss because they had a giant,
artichoke.
They had a giant plastic artichoke, this 40-foot wide artichoke over the top of it. But it was amazing that everything on the recipe, every dish, including the coffee, was made with artichoke. It was fiber heaven. Are you traveling out there sometime this week, or do you have any odd shaped tomatoes that you'd like to discuss with us? You know, there are some Freudian tomatoes out there, and if we'd like to help you interpret your gardening, traumas, we were able to do that by really interpreting. People read tea leaves. We interpret odd shaped tomatoes. Really.
Well, I'll tell you what. There is a giant artichoke restaurant in Castroville.
Mm-hmm. Ah, you had it.
That's the one.
Thank you very much.
That's Thanks very much for calling. Oh. But I'm here to tell you that there are many artichoke restaurants.
Ooh.
There's the Wild Artichoke Restaurant in Yorba Linda, California, and that's the
upscale place. Don't go there.
Anyway, you can go online and find the Wild or the. I'm sorry. The
what's the name of the Castroville restaurant, Larry?
It's called the Giant Artichoke Restaurant.
Okay.
Couldn't have guessed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, I will we'll call that one up. Anyway, it's not in Wisconsin. I thought it was in Wisconsin too when you were talking.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
No, it's a California thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, you can actually produce
You can grow an artichoke.
You can grow an artichoke. It's not an easy process, though. Yeah. I mean, you have to have a greenhouse, basically, in order to, because the growing season is like, you know, 40 years. Well, at least 18 months. You can start them in the greenhouse, and you can grow them during the entire winter, you know, which is just like the climate of coastal California. And then you can transplant them out, and you get these tiny little pathetic artichokes. Although, as I say those words, I know that there will be
There's
a listener out there saying, well, he hasn't grown them the way I've grown them. I've got 40 pounders. But my experience is that you get a pretty small, but exciting. It's an exciting adventure in artichoke growing.
I want to go back to Jane, who's her question was, how do you string and dry the peppers?
Well, drying, you know, is really, the thing is you have to use a pepper that has a thin wall. When you see the ristras, right, in New Mexico, these are made with thin wall peppers, not thick wall peppers. So if you try to do it with, you know, with a bell pepper, the vegetable Bimbo, I mean, all you're going to get is just this big rotten mash of. I don't have to go into this.
No.
But what you
want, listeners can visualize.
They can visualize this.
Yeah.
But if you use a thin wall pepper, and peppers are bred that way. I mean, that was how they were domesticated. Some were domesticated specifically for drying, and those are the ones that are used for the ristras. And so I would look for thin walled types.
Thin wall types, and then you just string them with...
Even an Anaheim. You know, the Anaheim would work well here.
That's a perfect... That
and so you just string them with a needle and thread and let them hang till they dry.
That's right. And apparently the lore associated with this was that, you know, you're hanging peppers where you're welcoming Matt to the world. So it was sort of like, this is a happy home. Come visit us.
Jackson and Madison, hi to you. Are you there?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I wanted to know about tomatoes.
Okay.
Because I'm growing some and they're doing really well. Right about when they get full size and start turning red, they start turning black from the bottom up.
Oh, blossom end rot.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because, you know, you had... The problem here, of course, with this is a common problem out in our fields right now. Almost every tomato grower has this, and it's due to the fact that we had that spell of very hot, dry weather. Then we get
tons of water.
Then we get way too much water, so the tomatoes are cracking. Then we go to dry again. So it's due to a variation in moisture content.
And
calcium mobility, and. I would say that remove those tomatoes from your tomato plants, and the rest of the season, I will pretty much guarantee that we will not have that problem again.
Okay.
Do you have any unusually shaped tomatoes that you would like us to help interpret for you?
Not really.
Okay. Okay. Because we're ready to do that.
Yeah. Thanks, Jackson.
We're pretty much chomping at the bit to do that.
I've had pictures sent to me of tomatoes, of misshapen tomatoes, some X-rated pictures.
We're not going there. We don't want to interpret that.
Family show.
Pretty cool. Some of them are pretty cool. Lou in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Lou.
Hi, Larry. I've got an answer, I think, for... the lady with the peppers, too.
Yeah, go ahead.
I did it one year because I had a plethora, if you will, of red chilies. And so I put on some rubber gloves and sat at the kitchen table with a darning needle and nylon thread and proceeded to string them. Once they were dry, then I could kind of form it into whatever I wanted to do with it. It was pretty easy to do, but you have to be careful with your eyes. And speaking of tomatoes, I have some really strange ones growing there.
Ooh.
An heirloom, a black something or another. I don't know when to tell when they're ripe. They're really pretty ugly.
I know. This is the tomato that has... some tomatoes have, in addition to the carotenoids, they actually produce anthocyanins, and they become blackened, don't they,
Irwin? That's right.
So they give that appearance of being a black tomato.
Well, they're actually called black something, And I've raised tomatoes all my life, and I've never seen anything like this. But
I think it reveals a dark side, though, that we don't want to delve into as we interpret that.
Oh, we want to talk about
could,
the dark side. Well,
do you know? Do you know Pablo Neruda's ode to the tomato? By the way, do you know that? Are you familiar with this?
Do you know that one, Lou?
It's
a poem, I think.
Was the question?
It's Neruda. You know Pablo Neruda, right? Nobel Prize, right, for poetry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What a poet, right?
But
will you allow Erwin and I to read you Pablo Neruda's ode? I mean, Pablo Neruda wrote an ode to everything. He wrote an ode to a big tuna in the market.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, a chestnut on the ground, right?
Mm-hmm. How about an ode to a tomato, then?
Will you allow us to do that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll do it in my broken Spanish.
Go ahead,
Erwin will do it in his elegant English. How's that?
Okay. I'm going to hang up.
All right.
No, don't hang up because we want your comments on this.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do that
right after.
I remind everybody that our guests today are the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman, Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mealer with my guests, the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman. Thanks for listening in. Give us a call if you have a question as well at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Lou in Kenosha called and mentioned tomatoes, and that inspired you, Jim, to go to the readings of a famous poet.
Now, this is Pablo Neruda's Ode to the Tomato, if I may.
Please.
Tiene luz propia, majestad benigna. Debemos, por desgracia, asesinarlo. Se hunde el cuchillo en la pulpa vivente. Es una roja víscera. Un sol fresco, profundo, inagotable, llena las ensaladas de chile.
Ooh, you read that very well.
Woo!
In Spanish.
Isn't that
but
fabulous?
Give us the English version.
What does that mean?
Oh, my God. I don't know if I could handle this.
You know, and it has to be said how difficult it is to translate poetry. This was translated from the Spanish by Margaret Sayers Peden. And, you know, how much does it lose in the
translation?
But,
you know, she does a good job.
She does a beautiful job.
She does a good job.
And here's what that passage says. It says, "It sheds its own light, benign majesty. Unfortunately, we must murder it. The knife sinks into living flesh, red, viscera, a cool sun, profound, inexhaustible, populates the salads of Chile."
Oh my!
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes,
isn't that beautiful?
I have to go, but yeah. Thank you for reading it to me.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening. That is the Ode to Tomatoes by Pablo Neruda.
Gosh,
the thing of
thank
beauty.
Thank you, Erwin. Thank you for sharing that moment with me.
Oh.
It was wonderful. Joan in Bristol. Hi to you.
Hello. You guys are crazy. But in a good way.
Good.
But I was listening to you were talking about Castroville.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I was there. And it was about 4 years ago or so. And if I can find the picture, I'll send it to you. But
are you still regular?
My buddy and I were under the big artichoke.
Did you go to the restaurant?
No, we just went by and we just took some pictures. Mm-hmm. But that artichoke is there. And we have pictures that we were standing under, like we were holding it up. And it's really funny. So I'm at work, though, but I don't know if I have it. But if I do, I'll have to send it to you because it's
yeah.
Email it to us here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe we can put it up on our website.
Okay, is that the talk at WPR.org?
Right.
Okay. And then, you know, I just want to say that, you know, everywhere you go there's artichokes. I mean, it's like driving around here now and the corn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a real cool little town. It's really...
And it's right on the coast. I mean, that's the whole deal, is that it gets those, you know, obviously it never freezes and it maintains. It's like in January we might think it's attractive, but actually it's like the dullest.
Yeah.
It's like the dullest climate on earth.
Yeah.
I mean, you wake up every morning. Every morning you wake up and it's foggy until 11. And then it's, you know, wasn't this just like the bizarre movie they had with this guy kept repeating?
It was Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
It's like living in Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. Like one day you can take it, but the next day you say, Oh, it's foggy again. Oh, it's 11. I think the sun will come out.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Then the next day, the same damn thing.
Yeah.
It drives you crazy. No wonder they eat artichokes.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a very cool town, though.
Thanks,
but anyway,
Joan.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful to listen to. It's a great show.
Thanks, Joan. Thanks a lot for calling. Bill in Milwaukee, I think it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Let me pull over real quickly, but let me also say that, I'm a driver for my career, and if it wasn't for public radio, I think I would have quit my job a long time ago. Two questions from a beginner gardener. Tomatoes. First of all, we have the tomatoes in these large bins up on our porch, and I see these other tomato bushes, and they're so big and full and lovely, and ours are kind of so puny and small.
You mean other people who have other tomatoes in their porch? Or
I have seen one. Yeah, well, I was most distraught yesterday when I saw somebody who had their tomatoes in a bin, and they're big and lovely as well. So,
you're on the road a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Consequently, you're not watering them enough. You know, the trouble with those bins, I think people, for the most part, even I, you know, reasonably experienced kind of a vegetable guy.
You underestimate the amount of water they need.
Yeah, underestimate the amount of water they need. And you underestimate how much that soil that they have in bins like that will cycle. So I would suggest that you set up a little watering regime and convince your neighbors or significant other to water more frequently. And even though she indicates that she is, I did water it. I would question that. And indicate,
right.
I would like, you know, volumes.
Like more than once a day.
I want more frequency and volume. Yeah. Oh, you want a lot of water. Yeah.
Yeah, but not more than once a day. I wouldn't think.
No.
Yeah.
No. But a lot.
Well, I mean, would you suggest like an organic, I guess, fertilizer? My partner is kind of against the whole inorganic fertilizers, and I was wondering if you had any.
Sure, you can do that. You could use an organic fertilizer. I mean, that's no problem. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, the more organic matter you have in the bin, in your soil, the more it's going to hold moisture. Is that right, Maria?
Absolutely. What did you use, by the way, in your bin? What type of soil did you use?
Just topsoil and a little bit of manure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good one.
Was it composted manure or?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I recently did have some time off, and I realized that they had spent most of their – there's a screen attached to the railing. And I realized that they had been spending most of their time in shade. Hmm. So I think that has a lot to do with it. Also.
Yeah,
the photosynthesis thing.
That's a big thing.
You know, I would have to say that's a critical feature.
Yeah, we studied that.
That's Hort 101. Yeah, that photosynthesis thing.
And you're using composted organic matter, right?
Time to time, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, if you use non-composted, what happens then is, well, you guys. It ties up the nitrogen in the soil, does it not?
As I have no idea.
Yeah, that's right. It ties up the nitrogen in the soil as it composts. It goes through that process, and so you're in some ways you're getting less, probably.
Right. Whatever nitrogen would have been present there, you're not getting access to it. That's right. That's right.
I understand.
Yeah.
And one more question.
Okay.
Black raspberries. I've also kind of let the black raspberries just go.
Okay.
Purchase them, and they have like long shoots. Can I just cut those back? Or
not only can you cut them back, you can dig them
just
out.
Just completely take them out.
Yeah.
And make room
for.
I think Jim's point is to take them out and make room for vegetables.
It's totally ridiculous.
Really, the
to
bottom
have those
line. Yeah.
Out there.
I mean, you know, on the one hand, you could call the fruit if there is a fruit show. You know, that they might be able to answer that.
They might give some biased response, you know, about how to actually preserve those. But our response is pretty clear. Get rid of them.
But I tell you what, I think.
Roundup.
I think that there are different types of black raspberries. And you may, some types you cut down in the old canes and some you don't. So we might
the beauty of those subtleties are lost on me, Larry. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. Michelle in Wanakee, it's your turn. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got two things, and the first of them is a pepper haiku.
Oh, my God. Oh, God bless you. A pepper haiku.
There's background on this.
Oh.
I've got 45 different pepper plants in the ground right now.
Oh, wow.
Of like 7 or 8 different varieties. And this spring, as I was hardening them off, the labels washed off in the rain.
Oh.
And this is dangerous only because two of the varieties, I've got a Bulgarian carrot and a tequila sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
And they both look a lot alike, but apparently are very different.
The Bulgarian tequila. I'm not familiar with that.
The Bulgarian carrot.
Oh.
And a tequila sunrise.
Ooh.
They're both long-bodied orange peppers. And the former is hottish. And the latter, from what I'm understanding, is not-ish. And so and so there's the background on my haiku.
Oh, God bless you.
And here it goes. Capsicum roulette. Cursed tags washed clean by rain. One bite might kill me.
That's great.
Oh my gosh, that is so good.
Yeah, it's really
good. Wonderful. Did you get that down, Larry? One bite might kill me.
One bite might kill me. I like the way you paused as you read that.
Oh, that was, you know, that was Neruda-esque.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have to say you're right in there. Oh, that is a wonderful thought. How much fun it's going to be, though, to sort through
gardening,
all of those peppers.
Gardening has a bit of risk associated with it.
You know, and this is making it super risky. I mean, peppers are risky enough.
Yeah.
And this is just adding to the excitement.
I'd like, you know, but sometimes it generates anger. And especially when I come home, right, from our research field, and I bring home a bag of peppers and give them out to the neighbors, and then, you know, I see them, you know, choking and gasping for breath. And they're saying, oh, my God, those are so hot. Oh, my God. And, you know, and I haven't sensed that.
And you weren't weren't trying to get back at the neighbors. Or
No. It's nothing to do.
It's nothing personal.
Nothing personal there. But I sensed there's been some anger. I've been forced to breed for the Norwegian palate, which was not my intention.
Yeah.
Well, that brings me to the second thing I called about.
Okay.
Advice for Jane, who had questions about stringing pepper.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
And this is a very important, often overlooked piece of advice. And that is, when you are finished stringing hot peppers to dry,
yes,
throw the needle away.
Ooh.
Do not put that needle back in your sewing kit.
Is this a spiritual or a medical reason?
No, this is a physical reason. Because a year from now, when you take that needle out of the sewing kit and you try and thread it, and you miss a little, and after touching the thread onto that needle, you put it in your mouth to kind of make it sharper to go through the hole.
But you know, at that very moment, don't you sense that a haiku would come to you?
At that very moment,
I lick the pointed needle which threaded my ristra last year. You know, I can't get the last word, the last phrase to that, but it's in there. It's in our listening audience.
I'll tell you what, I'll bring it to you tomorrow because I'm looking forward to seeing you guys tomorrow. That is the best spousal date of the year, your guys' thing out at that research station.
I'll tell you what, and we should talk about that a little bit. The West Madison Agricultural Research Station is the site of the big event that will feature the Vickers of Vegetables tomorrow, among other things. And Erwin, you want to say what's going on?
Well, it's the Urban Horticulture Field Day at the station. And Larry's right. I think it's about 10 a.m. It opens up, and it's open for probably, 10 to 3, 10 to 4. And everybody's welcome. It's free. You can bring your family.
It's 10 to 3.
Mm-hmm. 10 to 3. What you'll see there, the folks out at the West Madison Station, Judy Reith-Rosell and her colleagues out there just do a fabulous job. Tom Wright and others do a fabulous job with this garden, which has flowers. It has vegetables. I think there may be fruits there.
purple carrots.
And there's just everything out there. And Jim will be prepared to make you some salsa from some of the hot peppers.
We're going to make some salsa, and Erwin and I have some chips. We're going to let you taste our salsas, and then we're going to have our pepper roaster out there, and we're going to roast. We have harvested a lot of the new variety, our new Wisconsin Wowsta. which the name of which may be changed.
Mm-hmm. But it is a poblano pepper, right?
This is a poblano pepper. It's kind of a poblano Anaheim, specifically bred for roasting in Wisconsin. And we're going to have that roasted right next to roasted vegetable bimbos. And what you'll be able to do is compare the qualities, or at least identify the qualities, verify the qualities of the Wisconsin roaster compared to the vegetable bimbo. So, and we'll give you a bag, and hey, it'll be fun. We'll give you a bag of roasted peppers. You can take them home and have some fun.
10 a.m. to 3 p.m. tomorrow at the West Madison Agricultural Research Station, and that's located in at 8502 Mineral Point Road, 8502 Mineral Point Road in Verona, Wisconsin.
It's right next to the West Sidefield Station.
That's right. And it is just west of the Beltline on Mineral Point Road.
Right.
That's right.
All right. Michelle, thank you.
Thank you.
So much. Appreciate it. I'm glad that Michelle called and reminded us to put a plug in for the Urban Horticulture Field Day. Susan and Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hello. You guys are a riot. I am just laughing. So I can't.
Are we the click and clack of vegetables?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so we're going to buy a new house the end of this month.
Ah.
And they have a big garden out there, but it looks like they haven't been attending to it. So it's just all overgrown. Do you have any pointers for us for next year?
Let's see, Roundup? Is that a problem? And are you an organic
person?
Is
it all weeds?
Yeah, it is. All weeds.
Okay.
Well, you're going to have, that means you've got weed seed being produced in abundance. Anyway, you know what I would do? I would use, plow it. I would till it appropriately this fall, right? And you may want to use some sort of a mulch next year, either a plastic mulch.
Black plastic
sure. And that, keep the weeds down because you may have a bit of a weed problem.
Mm-hmm.
But, the good thing is if the garden's there before, that means that there's some fertility and probably, you won't have to do a lot of fertilization. And hopefully it's well drained. And you'll have a good time. And I hope you'll get some Wisconsin Wosta seeds and join us in the adventure of pepper roasting.
Okay, great.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
Do you have any unusually shaped tomatoes out there that you would like us to interpret? Are you? I don't know. I'm into this Freudian tomato thing all of a sudden, Irwin. What is that all about?
If you guys ever come to Chippewa Falls, I really hope you look us up. You guys are too much.
We will definitely let you know, Susan, if the Vickers are going to Chippewa Falls.
Do they let us out at all, Irwin? It's only our work release.
Only with those little collars.
Yeah, those collars.
Oh, my goodness. Thanks, Susan. Dave in Livingston, you are next. Hi, Dave.
How's it going, guys?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I have a question. I know normally you choose not to do much with fruits, but I think you could probably appreciate this. I'm looking to I love my peppers, and I love doing chili and salsa, but I wanted to make something different, something, not always on the up and up as far as I want to shock people when I do my cooking, and I've been looking to make a habanero jelly.
Habanero jelly?
But I want to use rhubarb to give it a good sour and then a little bit of apple, but yet I haven't come up with the right way of doing it. I've thought about just pureeing the entire habanero and cooking it down, but I was considering using T-balls instead. So then the metal screw to get a T-ball
now hold
with
it.
The
what
habanero
is
in it.
Hold it. I'm having my
You're
mind.
Talking about steeping the habanero?
Steeping the habanero in the actual rhubarb apple mixture.
Okay, now the rhubarb, we'll accept that as a vegetable. What the heck is a T-ball?
I think it's the thing metal you use to strain the tea. You steep the tea.
Oh, I had visions of violence.
You were thinking of it.
Because, he opened this up with, I'm into shock cooking.
Yeah, he did say
that. And so I had tea balls. I was envisioning, warfare out there. Okay.
Oh,
now,
it is. It's a
now, here's what I would do. I would definitely.
It just keeps everything inside. So then you still get the juices out, but at the same time, it won't leave any telltale seeds or anything that might.
I would take the seeds out of the habaneros because they're irritating, But depending on how sensitive you are, and I know that you're a spiritually sensitive man, but it's we're talking about the fingers and tender tissues here. Now you may want to actually protect your hands as you're cleaning the habaneros, but I would take the seeds out, and then I would mash them. I personally am a great lover of the habanero.
Now, but steeping, it's an interesting question to think about steeping a pepper. Will you Will the alkaloids come out of that pepper when it's steeped?
It is fat soluble. It's alcohol soluble.
So you'd need something in that rhubarb apple mix.
Yeah, you'd have to be rhubarb beer mixture.
Yeah, you'd need something in there to draw the alkaloid, to draw that out of the pepper.
Yes, I see.
Okay.
Right? So, you sound like a chef, so you probably have some ideas, but you do need something lipid, something fat.
In order to get the cell, that's right, or else you won't draw it off.
If I make it some kind of compote or maybe like a rhubarb apple butter.
There you go.
Rhubarb apple butter or rhubarb apple butter beer.
Blitz, when I actually take the habanero, I'll fry it in butter and then fry the banana in that butter.
Now you're talking.
It transfers.
There you go. That's right. Now you're talking.
This is not shock cooking.
This sounds fabulous.
This is fabulous. Yeah.
I make jalapeno pepper jelly, or I have made it quite a few times, and that's a pretty... You can find recipes for that all over the place.
You know, there's this new Peruvian restaurant in Madison, and we went there, and we had... You know, they deep fry yuca, which is like so much better than a French fry.
Yuca is cassava.
Yeah. And they had a salsa there that was just... It was incredible. And, of course, I had to dive back and, you know, talk to the chef about this. But they used a pepper called, the ají, you know, the AJ with a tilde on the end. The ají pepper, and it's a different species. It's bacatum, Capsicum bacatum. And what they do is they mix that, and incredibly what they do is they mix it with cream, you know, or half and half.
And to cut some of the intensity,
not only to cut the intensity, but also just as you indicated, because of the solubility of the fats, right, of the capsaicin in the fats.
Yeah.
But the odd thing for me was that it had a viscosity that was, you know, it wasn't consistent with that, with those two ingredients, chopped ají pepper and half and half. So apparently what they do to thicken is that they use crackers. like a saltine cracker. And it just makes this incredible salsa. Now, if someone is more familiar with this recipe, and I know that you, our listeners, are out there, some chomping at the bit saying, he got that completely wrong. But I will tell you that for those of you who do love this recipe, we have a really early bacatum pepper. And I'm harvesting bacatums now.
That's a fabulous,
Well, I like the idea of the rhubarb and the pepper together. I think it could make a nice...
And the butter and the beer, I think, is really going to make it.
Mm-hmm. And the jalapeno pepper jelly that I've made, you serve that just sort of as a little appetizer on crackers with a little cream cheese and then the pepper jelly over the top of it. Mm-hmm. And it's quite nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I'm kind of curious. I've also heard some people touting this black Japanese pepper. They can't tell me what the name is. Do you guys know anything about that?
I'm not familiar with that one.
I don't know it either.
Everybody is telling me that it'll blow away habanero, which to me,
There was recently this year a report of a pepper that was much hotter than habanero, and I see Larry looking this up. Maybe we'll have an answer here, but there was a report just recently about something
But this, you know, the heat. It's not the heat that really. I mean, I like some heat. But it's really flavor that I'm into more than just, the capsaicin. I mean, if I want to have my tender tissues ripped away, right? I mean, there are other ways I could do that. I mean, I could take a wood rasp, for example, and just plunge it down my throat. Or I could,
sandpaper.
Or gasoline, and then a hot match. There are a lot of ways in which you can abuse yourself, right, and your tissues. But it's flavor that you're really after.
And habanero has really that fabulous flavor. I mean, that's the beauty of that pepper.
It's the aroma of the habanero.
Yeah.
In fact, I mean, oddly enough, what we're doing is we're trying to reduce the amount of capsaicin and preserve the flavor. And that's what we're really after. I mean, there are a lot of ways you can abuse yourself. And that's not, eating habanero should not be one of them.
Well, I don't really mind the heat for the habanero. To me, I look at peppers as more like vinegar on a salad. It just releases other flavors. Mm-hmm. I've built up enough tolerance to the heat, but sadly, some people haven't. So a lot of times when
I'm doing
my cooking, it just kind of defries their taste buds, and they're just like, well, we can't taste anything. And I'm just like, can't you? I got fresh cilantro in this thing. Can't you taste it? No. I burned myself out on the habanero.
No, that's because the wood rasp of the habanero has basically taken their tongue and wrapped it around, you know, their left molar. You know, there's nothing left there. So you've got to be sensitive. You've got to be sensitive to the Norwegian palate, as I have learned.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks a lot for calling. Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman are Vicars of Vegetables here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking vegetables today with our Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis, UW-Madison Professor of Horticulture and Gardening and Haiku Poet, Erwin Goldman, Professor of Horticulture, Associate Dean of the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison, as we talk with them about peppers and all other kinds of vegetables. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And I haven't turned anything up yet on those black Japanese peppers. So maybe somebody else will have some information for us. Paul in Duluth, Minnesota. Hello to you, Paul.
Hello, hello. I got a couple of things. First about ristras. I lived in Colorado for a very long time, and I grow peppers here. And what I've discovered is that your point about the thin-walled peppers is absolutely correct, because I've made that mistake of trying to use a thicker one, and it didn't turn red. But what I do is I use a small metal skewer. You need to leave about an inch of the stem. That's really important. About an inch of the stem on the pepper, and you puncture it with the skewer, and then have some florist wire.
Florist wire.
It's sturdy.
Yeah.
That real thin florist wire. And you just run it through and just keep doing that until you've got your ristra. Especially if you want to hang it outside, because just, you know, regular thread will, you know, the first big wind that comes along is going to destroy it. But the other thing I called about was leeks. This is the first year I've tried to grow leeks, and the instructions on the seed packet said to plant them at the bottom of furrows.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done that, and they're about as big as a large green onion right now, and I've been told that what you need to do is start burrowing dirt around them if you want to have that real nice white bottom.
Right, you have to sort of blanch. That's sort of a way to get them blanched.
Yeah, how soon should I start doing that?
Well, you really have to start very soon when they come out. I mean, Jim is an expert in growing leeks, so I'll turn it over to him. But you really have to start soon, or else as soon as those leaves are exposed to sunlight, chlorophyll is going to develop, and they will no longer be white. But Jim is an expert.
Oh no, I just think it's wonderful that you're growing the leek.
Yeah.
Because if I had to think of a vegetable, I mean, if you had to think of one vegetable that is the perfect adaptation to Wisconsin, wouldn't you say the leek?
The leek is just ideal.
I mean, it's just perfect for us. Yeah. And not only that, and as you go into autumn, right, that potato leek soup, or as the French call it, vichyssoise. but they eat it cold. I don't know. You know, they're punishing themselves for something. But if you eat it warm, right, the potato leek soup is terrific. Yeah.
Excellent.
But you have to. But Erwin's right. You have to mound them up pretty early in order to prevent it. But don't you worry. You're going to have plenty of leeks out there. And if you've got them the size of a big onion, you're going to have a ton of leek tissue. And
well,
you're going to be able to produce
them. I already have. In fact, I made chicken stock the other day, and I used I thinned them out a bit and used the thinning in my stock, and it's delicious. Mm-hmm. Is it too late for me to even start?
Are they? What is the tissue like? Is it light green?
It's very tender. They're like I say. They're like a mild green onion right now.
Yeah. Well, I think that you're not going to be able to make them white. I mean, once the chlorophyll starts to develop, you're not going to be able to reverse that. But certainly, if you mound up some soil at their base or put something, it doesn't have to be soil, at their base, you will keep that lower portion of the leek, what's called the pseudostem. You'll keep it tender, and so I think you'll have a nice quality to it if you do that now.
Okay, and like I say, I tried to come up with a haiku concerning leeks, but It wouldn't be anything you could put on the air.
Well, I don't know what that means.
This is a family show, yeah. So we do appreciate your
restraint.
Fortunately,
they don't have any unusual shapes that we would have to interpret for him, right? Wow.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for calling.
There's a happy gardener.
Mark in Green Bay. Hi to you.
Oh, hi. Thanks a lot for the opportunity.
Sure.
Do you have any foolproof method of figuring out when a watermelon is ripe?
Ooh.
Yeah. There must be a...
There is a foolproof method. It's called cut it open. Well, now, that's... did you want the less than foolproof?
I had a watermelon drop, shattered skull upon the ground, fries red flesh laid bare.
You know, is that a haiku?
I do it. You know, I dropped the dang thing when I was trying to figure out if it was ripe or not. And it was ripe. But thumping it really hasn't panned out.
Thumping isn't the way to... I think the way to do it is to look at the vine end of the watermelon.
Because it's a...
I think it turns a creamy color, doesn't it? Kind of when it's ripe. Doesn't it turn... Or when a kind of a cream color?
I think that's right.
Yeah, I've heard someone else give advice that when that little tendril that's opposite where the stem attaches dries up, it's ready. But that doesn't work. Anyone?
Really? It doesn't? That should work, actually.
Well, you know, the only thing to do is north here in Green Bay or something.
Well, that's, you know, that is not exactly watermelon land.
Oh, and it was a good one.
Okay,
yeah, good.
Okay.
Look for creamy yellow color on the
stem. Yeah, the stem.
The attachment.
The attachment.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot for your help.
Yep, thanks for calling. And somebody's going to call and straighten us out on that if we're incorrect, but I think that's right.
Is the lady who I told that you couldn't grow okra, is she going to call today?
I don't know.
Because my okra is the size of an oak tree. Honestly, boy, have I been humbled by that one. I said it was tough to grow here, and whoa, was I wrong on that one, at least this year.
Tim in East Troy. Hi, Tim.
Hi, thanks for having me on. A couple things for you guys. I've been told that there is an ideal time of the day to pick tomatoes where the plant puts more sugar into the fruits. And I'm at Michael Field's Agricultural Institute in East Troy. They have a lot of meetings with a lot of farmers and stuff, but no one here has heard of that. When I mention it and say it's, I thought I heard that it's what they do in California, people out here go, well, California tomatoes, why do you need them? Do you have any sense of... Does sugar concentrate itself more in the fruits at a certain point in the day?
No.
Okay.
And don't do anything... Oh, I'm sorry. Did I miss that?
I think you're right. I think Jim's right. But I do think there is cycling of the sugars that are manufactured with the seasons over time during the growing season, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I think some type of diurnal cycle throughout the day, I don't think so.
I just don't think it would be detectable at all it's all about, the reducing sugars are going to accumulate dramatically in tomatoes as they mature.
And that's like a linear, just going to keep.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just growing.
It's an almost linear trend, and with maturity, you're going to increase sugars. In fact, really the problem we have in Wisconsin is the fact that we do not produce enough sugars. The reason that tomatoes are produced in California for processing, mm-hmm. The reason H.J. Heinz and Campbell's Soup all moved out there was because they could produce, the reducing sugars much more efficiently out there than we can here. We don't get anywhere near. They get about 6% Brix. That would be about 6%, right? Mm-hmm. Say sugar, 6 to 7%. It's hard to get a tomato above about 4 or 5 here in Wisconsin. So, they're not going to be as sweet. But listen. No gardening advice that comes from California is going to be allowed on this show. That's the bottom line.
It is true that, is it not, that tomatoes were, at one time, the ones we grow here, more acid than they are now. I know that the home economists, when they talk about canning tomatoes now, suggest addition of some acid material, lemon juice or something.
It's funny how people have different tastes. We do this in our class. We will do it in a few short weeks when we do our class. We find that the students have really different preferences. Some people really go for sugars. And for that reason, some breeders have selected for sugars. But there are others that are, for me, I personally... any food that hits more than one, taste sensation at a time is what you want to go for. So the tomato is really the essential vegetable equivalent of sweet and sour pork.
Yeah.
Right? It's sugars and acids that really excite our taste buds. So I like a balance between the two. But I notice that a lot of tomatoes today tend to really not have that balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My other question was about peppers. I think I have bacterial wilt on a certain type of green bell pepper. And in the same bed, I have oregano separating in the middle of the bed, and then some red peppers on the other side of the oregano. The bacterial wilt is only affecting the green bells, and it hits them, and 2 days later, they've pretty much wilted down, and I pull them out. I also have Jimmy Nardello's sweet peppers, and none of the other types are affected. So my question, and I looked it up a little bit, and the research that I did suggested that there aren't really any commercially available. For me, they would have to be untreated seeds that are really bacterial wilt resistant.
God, I didn't know bacterial wilt was even a problem in this. Where are you located?
Where?
East Troy.
East Troy. I didn't realize that it was a problem, and although it may be in that particular...
What is the plant... So you're talking about these symptoms are not on the fruit, but they're on the plant itself?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. It seems there's a little bit of a scarification just below the surface on the actual stem. And yeah, it really will... it'll drop fruit at that point, wilt, and pretty much just smother.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not spreading across. It's only in the one... In the one species, and it's not spreading across the oregano. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if oregano is antiseptic or if it's just,
If you want to solve this problem, I do have a solution for you. It's a creative solution, by the way. Bacterial wilt is a problem in tomatoes, especially in the tropics, right? And one of the things that they do in order to control bacterial wilt is they graft. So you could do the same thing with peppers.
We could go
back into grafting.
Yes.
It's gonna work this time. I know I failed on every other graft.
I'm with you.
I would graft them.
And we,
that is a great experiment.
Well, we'll talk some more about that experience and experiment right after this look at the news. Stay with us. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my vicars of vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Erwin Goldman from the University of Wisconsin. Really happy to have them along. And certainly you join in, too, if you have some questions for them as we talk all things in the vegetable garden today. And, Jim, you were talking. Tim had a question about some peppers.
Bacterial wilt on the green bell pepper, but not on the other peppers he was growing.
So you could try to graft?
If he's desperate, if he has, a soil bacteria or fungus that's causing him some trouble, I would say, and he's got to have those peppers, and he's got to grow it in that location, then I would try grafting.
So you graft on...
Although, the stems are woody on tomatoes, or peppers, so you're going to have to then support the plant. Mm-hmm. But I've had great luck grafting, and... Mm-hmm. But I've not been able to translate that either enthusiasm or results to anyone else.
Okay. Thanks, Tim. Ted in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Ted.
Good day to you. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have a. I used to raise habaneros in abundance, and I use them for quite a few different things. And one way I used to save them or to preserve them was to line a cookie sheet with aluminum foil and cut the tops off and scrape some seeds out and then place them all in there or one layer of them and put them in the oven overnight at about 200 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, capsaicin is a wonderful molecule, and it is the molecule you cannot destroy.
Yeah.
You can't freeze it, cook it, bake it, beat it, right? And you're not going to destroy capsaicin. The sad thing about that preservation method, though, is that a lot of the volatile aromatic compounds are going to be lost. And that's sad.
Yes, but as you dry them in the oven overnight, that aroma spreads throughout the house, and it just smells like sweet cherries the next morning coming out of the oven.
As you're itching. And as your eyes are watering.
No, that's great.
One year I actually cleaned the seeds in our sort of DNA lab in the actual Hort building, Irwin. And oh my God, I had people, and no one could walk into the horticulture building without people would immediately begin crying and itching. And, we thought it was just an emotional horticultural experience. But in fact, it was capsaicin. It was capsaicin. Yeah.
Another thing I used these habaneros for was and potato leek soup.
Whoa.
Yes, they're excellent.
This is vichyssoise with a twist.
Yes.
Wow.
What you do is after you dry them, I've also smoked them until they become dry, and that is excellent.
That's better than tobacco then? Or
I think so.
Okay.
But, and to crumble them, or I'd run them through a blender after they were dry, turn them into a powder, and then add that. You have to be kind of careful. You have a great flavor, but a lot of heat. And blend that to a degree in your potato leek.
Wow, yeah, that could be hot. You know, one thing I would, you know, again, I turn to the listening audience in my hour of need here, because one of the things I really love to do is I don't dry the peppers because I love the aromatic aspects of them, is I wonder if it might be possible to parboil the pepper and then simply freeze it. You know, either chop it and freeze it. That would seems to me that would be a better way of preserving, you know, the freshness and the aromatic quality. What do you think, Erwin?
Absolutely. It's a great good way
work.
To go.
A lot of the aromatics in the water.
Then you're leaving you'd be leaving the aromatics in the water or not?
Right.
I'm sure that many of those are in fact water soluble. Capsaicin isn't, but I bet many of the many of the flavor compounds.
Sure, the flavor compounds probably are. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed talking with you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Ted. Thanks a lot for calling. Marika in McHenry, Illinois. You are next. Hi, Marika.
Hi, it's Marita.
Oh, thank you very much.
That's okay. I enjoy your program so much and have recommended it to all my gardening friends and garden
club.
Thank you. It's really been great. I've learned so much. I bought, even though I know better, heirloom tomatoes at a grocery store instead of from a gardener, from a reputable garden place. And just because I was in a hurry and was doing raised beds this year, well, my yellow tomatoes are shaped like yellow bell peppers. Exactly.
Are they hollow?
When you cut them, they look like a yellow bell pepper. When even the seeds are all congregated in the center there, like a bell pepper, when you cut into them and you eat them, it tastes just like a tomato.
Is it hollow? There's a particular variety that does have that exact characteristic, and it is a yellow tomato, and it's hollow inside, and it looks very much like a pepper. Yeah, absolutely.
And it is actually a tomato.
And I will say though that I bet that high quality, you know, source of the gardening source, and your grocery store. I bet they get their tomatoes from the same place.
Really?
Actually, yeah. And this is a particular variety. I bet it's unusual that you would have it. I've seen that it's a mutation in tomatoes, and I've seen it before.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was afraid maybe I got some cross breeding because we had somebody come to our garden club last year who warned us about doing that, and I thought, oh boy, this is what I've done.
Wow, no problem. It frightened you, but you don't want us to actually interpret the hollowness of that tomato in any Freudian way.
But it's actually a tomato then. I mean, that's good to know.
Yeah.
I did buy the black kilns also.
The black?
K-I-L-Ms. And they're doing okay. Now, the other thing that I do is I companion plant, and I plant jalapeno and cayenne peppers in front of my tomatoes to keep the bugs away, which has worked exceedingly well for me over the years.
And keeps the squirrel. And doesn't it excite the squirrels? Don't you just love seeing them getting all excited about that?
Yeah, it keeps the squirrels away also. But my one plant, I have two jalapeno. Now, they came from the same package, the package of four jalapeno plants.
Okay.
And the one plant closest to the cayenne peppers is a sweet jalapeno. It's mild.
Oh, cool.
Two are hot. Now, what happened there?
Well, that's called somebody made a seed mixture. That's what happened. And either that grocery store or that high-grade garden center, you know, things happen. And seed mixtures do happen. There actually is a variety called...
Is that the Fooled You?
Yeah. Yeah,
jalapeno.
That was the one that was developed years ago for the Pace salsa company because they wanted jalapeno flavor, But because of the variation in the climatic variation, the amount of capsaicin produced, they had to have they wanted to eliminate the capsaicin. So they just basically turned it off completely, the entire capsaicin pathway. And now it's called Fooled You.
And then they would, in making their salsas, they would just then reintroduce into the mix a measured amount of capsaicin,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So if I want to use the mild Fooled You capsaicin, the jalapeno, I still take the seeds out, though, right?
Well, because they're irritating.
Yeah.
Are you gonna? What are you gonna make? A chipotle? You're gonna roast them, or how do you use it for?
I love making my own tomato sauce.
Oh, good for you.
I just would rather make my own tomato sauce than buy what's in the store. And because we've had so much rain this year, I've got enough tomatoes to do that. In fact, I have a batch going on the stove right now.
So you're making like a tomato sauce, like a for spaghetti.
For spaghetti
and
or
you're
chili.
Adding.
I have a basic.
Well, it's interesting that you would add jalapeno to that.
Pardon? Yeah.
It's interesting that you would add jalapeno. When I make my spaghetti sauce, I always, you know, this is the dark side of me, Irwin. I use that Tabasco sauce, you know, to add a little flavor because it's so bright and red. Mm-hmm. But I've never added a jalapeno to, you know, a tomato sauce for.
That's why I was asking you. Could I do that with the mild one?
Sure.
Why not? Mean, you'd get the flavor from the mild pepper. You just wouldn't get the heat.
Okay. Well, people can add their own heat.
That's right.
That's right.
And the flavor is wonderful from those peppers.
Yeah.
What about that Peruvian salsa? Are you going to try that? I'm going to have to give you some seeds next year because you're a pepper lover. We're going to find out. We're going to get some seeds of this. We're going to harvest them, and we're going to give you some of this bacatum
ají. Oh, wouldn't that be fun? Where would we get them?
Well, you just write to Irwin and I and say, please send me some seed,
okay.
And we'll do that.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right. Thanks, Marika.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Paul in Potosi, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hi, guys. I'm enjoying the show here. I'm in a semi, actually, in Minnesota right now, so I'm going to lose service. I'm on a cell phone, so I'll talk quick. The guy that called in about the pepper jelly infusion will definitely work. I have done it. And you chop up your habaneros and you put it in, like, I've done it with grape juice or apple juice. It works the same both ways. Let it steep. Bring it up just about to a boil. Let it steep overnight and then strain it through a cheesecloth. My sister-in-law will attest to the fact it definitely works. And I've got a real quick recipe for what I call canned hell. Excuse my French. You need a number 10 can of ketchup.
Number 10 can of ketchup.
A big can of tomato paste.
Big can tomato pea.
And 1 cup of white vinegar.
1 C white vinegar.
And as many habaneros as makes you happy.
And as
and you chop them up. Let them sit in that vinegar. Again, warm the vinegar up. Let them sit overnight. Strain them out. Mix it all together and put it up in pint jars or quart jars and cold pack it till they seal. And it works, and it's great. It really gives it a good flavor, and it's fun to watch the look on people's face when they try it.
Could this be classified as a weapon of mass destruction?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I grow enough habaneros to poison the town of Potosi every year, so I'm really into them.
You ever get the sense when you get into the semi and drive off, they say, oh, thank God he's gone for a week or two.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to hang up, guys. I'm going down in a hollow, so thanks a lot. I'm enjoying the show.
All right, Paul. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. All right. Tony in Hixton, your turn. Hi, Tony.
Hello. I'd like to comment on a question you had a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Somebody raising rhubarb from seed.
Yes.
I clipped out those seed stalks out of my rhubarb after the seeds were beginning to dry already and just threw them on the ground. And lo and behold, I had dozens of sprouting rhubarb plants.
Good for
last
you.
Year. And this year, two or three of them grew to big enough that I could have harvested some rhubarb off of them. So those rhubarb seeds could be planted right away after they're...
So you just threw them on the ground?
Yeah, I just threw them on the ground. I was going to use those stalks for mulch. And the seeds fell off and germinated within a couple of weeks, I think.
Wow.
So they're ready to grow just as soon as they're dry.
You know, that's surprising to me, Irwin, that, you know, I see his observation, You know, but I wouldn't have expected that. I don't know the genetics of rhubarb. But, you know, ignorance has never stood in the way of me giving an answer in the past, right? Or even commenting.
Right? An opinion.
Yeah, an opinion, certainly.
Yeah.
Don't let ignorance stand in the way of me. But, you know, I'm surprised because you would think vegetatively propagated, it would undoubtedly be, you know, you'd think it would have evolved into a polyploid. And I would think very likely, right, not a polysomic polyploid, which would be sterile. Mm-hmm. I would have thought. I would have guessed that the seeds would not be viable. If you'd called up out of the blue and said, hey, what's going to happen? My great genetic brain would have said to you, hey, they won't germinate. They're not going to grow. But you have already proven me wrong.
That's great.
I'm surprised with that.
There's no reason not to try it. That's for sure.
Yeah, your guest commented that it might need to be stratified over winter or something, but I had that experience last summer, and this year again, I've got... What, 3 dozen plants there in a little patch the size of that pile of stalks.
Well, good for you, and thanks for calling.
I've got to find out about the genetics.
And for over winter, I just marked the area so I didn't dig it up, and quite a few of them came through the winter and grew again in the spring last year.
Oh, that's great.
So that...
It'll work.
They'll grow right away.
Thanks, Tony.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You could have fooled us. Andrea and Racine,
and
your turn. Thank you for calling, Andrea. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. I just wanted to give another suggestion for the jalapeno jelly. I have a wonderful recipe.
Wow.
Not as exact as the previous caller, but pork chops.
Excuse me, pork chops?
Pork chops. Brown them in olive oil. Slather them with your jalapeno jelly.
Oh, slather with the jalapeno jelly. Let me get this recipe down for us. Pork chops grilled, slathered with jalapeno jelly.
This is the cook who doesn't need a recipe. And I'd say about a quarter cup of red wine vinegar. That you pour into the pan, you kind of scrape up all of the whatever is browned in the bottom, and you cook it down until it's just kind of a nice reduction, enough to be a little bit thickened.
Any cook who uses the word slather, I'm into it. I've been paying attention, close attention, after I heard that word.
Well, yeah, it just depends on how much you like jalapeno jelly.
I want to slather it.
More or less.
And, oh, that's cool.
Reduce it down, and it's an absolutely fabulous sauce of both the tart and the hot on that.
How are they getting all this heat if they don't have, and there has got to be a fat there. I guess the pork, right? The pork fat. Yeah,
and
that's
olive
Sure, and the olive oil. Okay, that's where it's coming in.
Yeah, and the jalapeno jelly is already
I'm inspired by the fact that jalapeno is being used so universally as a cooking ingredient here in Wisconsin, because, you know, I mean, you'd think that, you know, that myriad of Mexican recipes and the way they're used, of course, everything today is called chipotle. I mean, there's a chipotle bagel.
Yes, there is.
You know, right.
Does that still qualify as, you know, as kosher when it's chipotle? I don't know if that's going to work or not, but, you know, there's like chipotle milk, there's like chipotle, you know, crackers. You know, this was a word that was unknown a year and a half ago, right? The power of marketing. And this all comes from, of course, the roasted Mexican jalapeno pepper.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Andrea.
Okay. I have one quick question about garlic.
Sure.
I'm a new chicken farmer, and we planted a nice row of garlic. And before we realized what was happening, our chickens basically took all the tops off of our garlic. I have one garlic plant left. It's now dried. I'd like to dig up the clove. I want to know, when do I replant those cloves for next year?
Well, let me just first say that you won't need to season your chicken.
No.
Wow. Good point.
Because that garlic
they're egg layers.
Well, you
layers.
Those eggs will be fabulous.
Yeah.
You will not have to saute any garlic while you're making your scrambled eggs.
Right.
I mean, that's a beautiful thing. And, by the way, you know, it's just sort of an oddity that garlic lowers cholesterol and in whoever consumes it. And so you can make apparently lower cholesterol eggs by feeding chickens. By feeding chickens garlic. But back to your question, you're asking about when you would put those garlic cloves.
When I would replant the cloves for next year's crop.
Well, you could put cloves out this fall.
Yes, that's what I assumed. So
that's what I would recommend you do. I don't know if you can hear us, but that's what I would recommend you do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Margaret in Three Lakes, Wisconsin. Hello to you.
Hello. I'm going to be a little off the subject also, and I have an oddball question. For the second year in a row, I have zucchini plants with no zucchini.
You must be the only person on earth.
I know.
that has that problem.
And we love zucchini. And the plants are great. There are blossoms. No fruit.
I don't have a good answer to that.
Yeah.
I would say the zucchini. I mean, it's either the zucchini curse or the zucchini blessing. There are many people out there who are saying, "If only I had that problem." The fertilization of the flower, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably either because they have to be pollinated.
Right.
In order to produce fruit. And Irwin was discussing this earlier, the fact that if you don't have, pollination and fertilization, you're not going to have the ovaries actually develop into fruit. And that's probably the problem. And you know what? I bet you won't be making the same phone call. I bet either the bees will come or the climate will change slightly, and all of a sudden your zucchinis mm-hmm. will just start
They'll
turning into...
Or your neighbor will show up with a grocery bag full of zucchini.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Because a lot of people would like to have your name and address so they could ship, basically semi-loads full up to you. So if you feel that you are zucchini deprived, I think our listening audience can solve this.
I am zucchini deprived.
Well, how do you fix the zucchini?
Oh, well, we like it just sliced in the microwave with a little bit of butter and crazy salt.
No?
And just microwaved, or zucchini pancakes.
Zucchini pancakes.
Oh, yes. Those are awesome.
Sort of like potato pancakes.
Right.
Just make them the same way.
You just grate the zucchini and put in probably an egg.
Yeah.
Some Bisquick.
Yeah.
Parmesan cheese, a little salt and pepper, and enough Bisquick to make a nice batter. And just fry them. They're fabulous.
Wow.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. I would try that with a little habanero pepper next time.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And that way you can do, because we're into that.
Right.
Well, I appreciate the call, Margaret. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
I make a casserole called Zubeefy.
Does it involve the word slathering?
You slather a bunch of cheese.
I don't know. There's something about that. Isn't that the most perfect word for getting a mental image of seeing that jalapeno being slathered. I was into that.
Well, the Zubeefy, I shouldn't have even started on that one because it's hamburger and zucchini and cheese and you could probably slather some jalapeno. You could do that.
Or some, ground up habanero. You're going to be slathering something after this phone call. I think there's no question about it.
Thanks, Margaret. Thanks very much for calling.
Slather sour cream.
That's the way to do it. Slather the sour cream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The perfect way to end the show.
Oof, slathering.
Thanks a lot for calling, Margaret. Jim and Irwin, thank you so much.
Our pleasure, Larry. Thanks for having us.
Don't forget, tomorrow, Saturday, August 18th, the Urban Horticulture Field Day at the West Madison Agricultural Research Station. It's at 8502 Mineral Point Road. Come on out and see Jim and Irwin in person and taste some of that great salsa and some of those other vegetables. And thank you all for listening. And please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening.